Hi, welcome to Missouri Made, the podcast that gives you an insider look at Missouri politics. I'm State Representative Deb Lavender, representing District 90, Kirkwood Glendale area of the St. Louis County. Representative Tracy McCreary, she's District 88, which is very close to mine. I'm District 90, so you are in the Olivet area.
Yep, I live in Olivet. I represent parts of Olivet, Ladue, Creve-Coeur, Town and Country, and I have a little bit of what I would describe as East Chesterfield.
Oh, cool. Very cool. Well, today we're going to talk about a couple of different topics that I know you've worked on for quite a while, but let's go ahead and start with the shackling of pregnant prisoners. We were just, before we started, talking a little bit about the history. Would you go ahead and fill us in on the history that you remember?
Well, you know, I love my job, but sometimes the years blend together a little bit. I think it was about 7 years ago that I met with a couple of college students who had been doing research. They were law students doing research on shackling of pregnant women who were in, you know, Department of Corrections, that kind of thing. And they gave a presentation to me and asked for me to support legislation. At the time, I was so new in the legislature, it wasn't anything I could take on. And we also had a champion who's now has been term limited out. Jeannie Kirkton championed this movement on behalf of the Democrats for several years and kind of handed that file to me as she was being term limited.
Yeah. And so just shackling. So I'm familiar more with shackling when I watch movies, and maybe even some older movies, although I know it's still something very prevalent that they do, that they are chains.
They're chains or restraints that are often used on the wrists and ankles, and during transport, sometimes chains are often even put across the woman's abdomen to keep her, you know, restrained even during transport.
And, which I think certainly makes it harder to escape. Even if you escape, you're certainly not going to run very far or fast. Obviously, anybody around you is going to see that, oh my goodness, here's this person running by me in chains.
Right.
So it's certainly a detriment to anybody escaping. And as you just said, if you're in transport, maybe you have a court appearance today. Maybe you have a doctor's appointment today if you're pregnant. And so the thought is we need to shackle you because we want to make sure there's no possibility of your escaping.
Right. I guess that's the idea behind it. You know, the challenge. So there's a couple of different, there's many different schools of thought on this about why it shouldn't be allowed. I mean, some consider the use of shackles at all as unconstitutional, you know, whether it, you know, and there's different ways to look at it. It could be kind of like a cruel and unusual punishment. And the reality is there's now technology available and other types of devices available where you can keep somebody from being able to run or run too far. And so the idea of using shackles or chains is very outdated. And more importantly, when we're talking about women who are pregnant, it can just be downright dangerous for the woman and the child.
Now let's talk about a pregnant woman who's in jail and she's being transported for a doctor's appointment or a jail appearance or whatever, and now she's shackled.
Right.
And I think that's where there's just this huge concern, even different than what you just brought up. There's now newer, broader technology.
Well, and there have been situations that have happened, unfortunately, around this country of very bad vehicle accidents happening and women and or their babies being killed during accidents because of the fact that they were chained to the vehicle during an accident.
So,
and we've had situations, actual cases in Missouri. So this discussion is not just philosophical. It's not a theoretical discussion. I read excerpts from a court case that talked about a pregnant woman who for days and days and days was complaining, was leaking fluid, and then
was in jail, was incarcerated, was in a cell, was complaining,
and
was not being attended to. She was obviously pregnant.
Very obviously pregnant,
Very obviously. She was in her last
She was drug around
weeks,
on a mat.
Right.
And 5 days later, after she started complaining about being in labor and leaking fluid, she was transported. She was shackled and then transported 5 hours to a hospital. And even though they drove past countless hospitals where they should have taken her, in my opinion, but she was taken to a hospital where the sheriff's department has a contract for these kinds of things, and gave birth to a stillborn baby. And the fetus's arm was actually sticking through the woman's vaginal wall.
Yeah. And so we hear of these stories and know that there's reality in Missouri of women still being shackled. We have, and I don't know that you were part of this, if it goes back to the Honorable Jeannie Kirkton, there has been legislation that has been passed in the House that our corrections department no longer shackles women that are pregnant and then at the time of labor.
Well, it was actually a Republican colleague of ours who's no longer in office, but State Representative Jean Evans was the person who was able to get a lot of legislation passed last year. So the thing I like about this movement is it truly is bipartisan. Mm-hmm. It's truly often women coming together to speak up for other women. And Representative Evans did a great job last year of shepherding this bill through. But unfortunately, we had to make some compromises at the last minute, and the language that Representative Evans got across the finish line only dealt with Department of Corrections.
Our Departments of Corrections.
So now what we're doing this year is we're coming back and we're trying to make sure that sheriffs or county jails are also prohibited from shackling pregnant women in certain circumstances, and also city jails as well. So we're making progress, but it's slow going at times.
It is, and there are, you know, good concerns on the side of sheriffs and correction agencies that they want to make sure that we're following existing law, that we're not creating new, I'm going to call it loopholes, that we're not creating the onus to be on the backs of the sheriffs to decide, that they feel very comfortable that there are rules and guidelines for appropriate behavior on their part. So we want, there's a lot of considerations.
Right.
You know, it seems like that should be a no-brainer.
Right.
Everybody should agree with this. But it's always the devil in the detail that you've really got to figure out how to set it up.
But call me an optimist. I am confident that we can figure out a way to be respectful of law enforcement and the dangers that they're under 24/7, but also be respectful of the woman, inmate, prisoner. And I think we can get there. So, you know, for me, it's all about doing the right thing. And part of this job is, you know, figuring out a way to compromise.
Right.
But I will say, in that language that was passed last year, fairly overwhelmingly, there is an ability for Department of Corrections to shackle a woman if it's an extraordinary circumstance. All they have to do is document why they were doing that. Mm-hmm. So there are plenty of ways. If someone is extremely violent or is considered a flight risk, they can very easily, they just have to write down the reason why they're restraining the woman.
Well, and I think as you're saying this too, there's certainly going to be an appropriate way to do that, to be respectful of the pregnancy and the fetus child that is inside, to make sure there's no harm done inside of the extraordinary measures that they may need to
take. Exactly.
So, no, I agree. Well, I appreciate your working on this and working on this for years. I know we had a win on this topic last year, but there's a little bit more to go, and hopefully we'll be able to get that passed this year.
Exactly.
So now a kind of similar but kind of different topic, diapers, feminine hygiene products. And so tell me a little bit about what you know about those.
Well, there's a couple of moving parts, if you will, on this issue. So I've been involved in trying to make sure that women within the prisons and jails have access to feminine hygiene. So Missouri Appleseed, a nonprofit based out of St. Louis and headed by a colleague or a constituent of mine, I should say, Liza Weiss, has actually done research within the Missouri Department of Corrections and found about over 80% of women who menstruate in the Missouri Department of Corrections system actually is using homemade tampons, tampons that they're making out of pads or toilet paper or paper towels.
Yeah.
So, you know, anybody who's a woman or knows a woman knows how just unhealthy that can be.
Right.
And those same women report having a high incidence of infections. And of course, you know, that means that they're using, they're needing to have medical care within Department of Corrections as well. So, so that is one thing that I have been working on this year. The good news is, knock on wood, let me find some real wood here, not for Micah. Within the budget that passed out of the House, we did include money in the budget for the Department of Corrections to provide quality tampons and pads for women. And that is a huge win, and I know you had a hand in that.
Well, in your use of the word quality, and then that takes it from homemade products, But what's so nice is, again, when you work with people, we have a director of corrections who's been with Missouri now for 2 years, mm-hmm. Ann Preseith. And Ann was just incredibly supportive of this idea, is happy to be able to provide this service. And they have some monies inside of corrections, mm-hmm. that's when our inmates buy things. Now, we don't, and I've asked and I've looked into this, we mark up products 20%. So a bar of soap, shampoo, some of the personal products that, that people in jail buy.
Right.
We do have a markup
right.
on
so
it.
So for example,
20%.
In Missouri, within a Missouri prison, a box of 20 tampons costs about $6,
yeah.
which is more than what we would get if we bought it at Target.
Right. But with the additional monies mm-hmm. that they have obtained from that, now that's where the tampons are, but then bar of soap or shampoo and all, that 20% now kind of keeps going. And it's inside of that profit margin that we now know there's enough money to just buy these products and have them available for women
right.
at no cost.
And that is a huge win for women's health, in my opinion. And we simply are following the lead of the Federal Bureau of Prisons. So there was a criminal justice reform bill passed at the federal level last fall where they provided the Federal Bureau of Prisons has agreed to provide quality products. So we're simply doing the right thing. It's part of a national movement. And more importantly, I believe that if a woman inmate is treated respectfully as it relates to her health, including menstruation, that ultimately there's going to be better behavior and better
right.
compliance with all of those
I think
rules.
So too. And I think it's one of those circumstances in life that you take for granted until somebody asks just a simple question of why do women have to pay for hygiene products? No one is paying for toilet paper. It is provided because we use toilet paper and we all use toilet paper. But that women use hygiene products, we don't even think that that should be supplied in the same manner as toilet paper.
Well, and I think an argument can be made. I used to be in the pharmaceutical industry. I very much consider feminine hygiene products, diapers, incontinence products like, you know, the underwear that are marketed towards men mm-hmm. and women of all ages,
mm-hmm.
I consider those healthcare products,
right.
and I do not think of them as luxury
right.
items.
Well, I was recently, I think it was a newspaper and perhaps in St. Louis, one of our schools, and it could have been in New York, I forget where, one of the schools is providing hygiene products in their
yeah,
bathrooms.
Yeah, Ladue School District, within my
okay,
own district, yeah.
For their girls.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we might see some more of that sweep across the nation, which I think is a fabulous thing. Now, as you brought up those other products, I'm going to tie this now. There is also another bill
right.
that has just gotten out of my rules committee that is still feminine hygiene products, diapers, and incontinent diapers. And the reason we have that now is to decrease the sales tax that we charge on it to have it be at a lower rate. So again, to make those products be more affordable
right.
for people across
now,
our state.
Now, ideally, I think they should be tax-free, but right now they're being taxed at the same rate as everything, like kind of a fairly high tax. What the bill sponsor, Dr. Neely, is trying to do is bring the tax rate down to at least the same tax rate that folks use when they buy food. So
right.
it's a more modest tax,
right.
which ultimately will help our working families and especially help
right.
Lower income families be able to meet their hygiene needs, whether it's diapers or whether it's adult underwear for an elderly parent that might be having
right.
some issues.
And one of the things that we think of is how regressive a sales tax is. And so if we reduce the sales tax, it really does help people at a lower income save more of their dollars.
Right, exactly.
And by a regressive sales tax, the less money you make, the larger proportion of your income goes to pay sales tax.
And these products are the perfect example of that. I think this makes it so easy to understand. So whether I make $20,000 a year or $200,000 a year, I menstruate at the same rate no matter what my income is. So, you know, for a higher tax rate on a product like that, it's just going to take a greater percent of my income. And that's
right.
less money I have to put food on the table or pay my utility
right.
bills.
Right.
So,
this week on the floor, we again debated another tax cut bill. And it would again cut tax rates of the highest brackets. And that's where we all can appreciate tax cuts. There's a point in time where we are realizing it's only benefiting those who are more wealthy among us.
Right.
And so that tax cut isn't the same regressive one that we're talking about when we talk about sales taxes. And that's why I think this is such a good idea for the people in Missouri who really are going to benefit from that tax cut in products that we know they're using on a regular basis.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about these things. I truly believe that although it feels like women are leading the charge on this, these are not women's issues. These are human issues. And I'm excited that we've got folks from both sides of the aisle working together on this. And I think it's the right thing to do.
I am too. Well, I thank you. I know we're near the end of the day, so I appreciate your taking some time out of your day to join us and appreciate having you.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Please subscribe to the podcast. We'll have a new episode each week. Follow me on Facebook and on Twitter at Deb Lavender. We'll have a website for you where you can find all of our episodes, videos from the Capitol, and more. Thank you for listening.